This is Marathon Training Academy, episode 129.
Welcome to the Marathon Training Academy podcast, where it's all about empowering you to run a marathon and change your life. I'm Trevor.
And I'm Angie.
In this episode, we talk with ultramarathoner Michael Wardian, who recently set the world record for fastest indoor 50K time. And for this episode's quick tip, Angie recommends a piece of gear for keeping warm during winter running. And if you'd like to get our help in your marathon training, you come to the right place. Find out how to become an Academy member and train with us and our awesome online community by visiting our website, marathontrainingacademy.com, and clicking on the Join the Academy page. So, Angie, you and I had the pleasure of going on a 7-mile run today in the city of New Orleans, Louisiana. We were actually recording from our hotel room. We're staying at the fabulous Drury Hotel in New Orleans. Definitely recommend staying here if you're ever in the city. Or if you're ever in any location where you can find a Drury Hotel, they are our official hotel sponsor, and they take great care of you. And is it too early in the show to start giving kudos to our sponsors or what? No, but we're having a great time. We're actually going to get on a cruise, heading down to the Western Caribbean. This will be our first cruise, and we're just, you and I, Angie, as a couple, going down there, spending some time, some fun in the sun, and then working on my tan, because I'm looking pretty bleached right now. So what else is going on? You got to sign up for the Lincoln Marathon in Lincoln, Nebraska, right?
Yes, that's in May, and I'm signed up for Boston, of course, in April, and then I entered the lottery for New York City this week, so...
Wow.
And then I'm planning on entering the lottery for the Marine Corps Marathon again, and I don't know if you are as well, but...
Yeah, I think so. And we do have a page on our website. Folks, if you want to, you know, see where we're going to be at, you just go to our About page, and you'll see a drop-down menu, and you'll see where we have upcoming races. We try to keep that current. So we don't have a lot planned right now, but we'll definitely be at the Lincoln Marathon for those of you that are going to be in that. The registration's already closed. I think it was open for like 12 hours, and then it filled up.
Yeah, it's really popular for some reason. Yeah. So we're going to go down there and see why it's so exciting.
I think there's just not much to do in Nebraska. So
it could be that.
People stand in line to get in the marathon. Well, recently the Disney Dopey and Goofy Challenge, Disney Marathon, all that went on, and we had some... Academy members who were there and that ran it, and Angie wants to give a quick roundup.
That's right. We had my coaching client, Kim, who did the Goofy Challenge, which is the half marathon on Saturday, followed by the full marathon on Sunday, and she did really well and very proud of her for that. And then we had Mark and Stephanie, who did the Dopey Challenge, which is the 5K, 10K, half marathon, and full marathon challenge.
Wow.
And you come away with 6 medals from that one. Tons of Disney bling. So that's always very exciting, and proud of them for taking on that awesome challenge and training hard to complete those. And I'd encourage you, if you're on Facebook, to come over and join the Marathon Training Academy page. We have a great group there, and I try to post regularly just different inspirational things and also things to get the dialogue going. And recently I posted a quote by Joan Benoit Samuelson, and she says, quote, "When I started running, I was so embarrassed. I'd walk when cars passed me. I'd pretend I was looking at the flowers." And I really thought it was pretty amazing that a very accomplished runner, an Olympian, started her running journey that way, by being embarrassed to be seen running. And it made me think that, you know, a lot of us started out that way. And so maybe you're at the point where you're still embarrassed to be seen running. Or, you know, maybe you remember that in the not-so-distant past, that it was an awkward feeling. And I remember when I first started running, I would run when there'd be people and cars around, you know, so I would look like I was running, and then they would go away, and I would like stop and walk and try to catch my breath. I wanted to be seen running, you know.
Right.
So that was kind of funny, and it generated some really good dialogue, and I thought I'd read some of the responses I got from people. Carl says, "My first runner jog was 4 years ago, less than half a mile. At 300 pounds, I tripped on the sidewalk, and I knew I had to change. Now running is a part of my lifestyle. Work tends to conflict, but I will not let it defeat me. Your podcast years ago on the Leadville 100 with Eric Strand is part of my motivation among being healthy, happy, and exploring nature's candy."
Oh, cool. Yeah, that was a fun interview. It's interesting what episodes, you know, really connect with certain individuals is kind of different for every person. But congrats to Carl, though, for taking action and losing the weight and becoming a runner.
That's right. That's really amazing. And this note comes from Marianne. She said, I started running 3 years ago in my mid-60s after being encouraged by a friend. I finished my first marathon in October, and I'll always be thankful that she urged me on.
So we should urge our non-running friends, not just count them as hopeless causes.
Well, I think if someone expresses an urge to start exercising or get healthier, yeah, we should encourage them. And that doesn't mean put pressure on them to do something they don't want to do, but it means being a healthy example to them and telling them they can do it. This next one comes from Monty. He says, I ran back in high school but had been a couch potato for almost 20 years. When I tried to run again, I did it on a treadmill. I was so looking forward to it, and I set a goal to run for 10 minutes. I was done after 7 seconds. After realizing that the treadmill was a bit much for me at the time, I got on the elliptical and exercised for about 15 minutes and then swam for about 10 minutes. I actually used to run and swim back in my days in high school, but after being a couch potato for so long, my body simply was not ready for such, quote, strenuous exercise.
Wow.
After getting out of the water, I thought I was about to pass out. I had to sit there for at least 15 minutes to feel better. While I was sitting there, I told myself to act like you're just taking a nap so others wouldn't know that you suck so bad. As soon as I came up with that idea, I said to myself, that's a stupid idea. Who would be taking a nap by an indoor swimming pool? That's why it had special meaning to me when I finished the indoor triathlon competition at my gym back in August of last year.
It's interesting, you know, the mental chatter that he had going on.
And we all have that mental chatter that goes on. You know, it's like, oh, I better look like a runner, or I better improve my running form. You know, we just have this weird stuff that pops into our head. And, you know, most people are just excited to see you out there. They're not critiquing your form or thinking, oh, that person doesn't look like a runner.
Yeah, so what you're saying, Angie, is just get over it and go out and run.
That's right. Just do what you need to do and don't worry about what other people think of you. And this last one comes from Terry. She says, when I started running in my mid-40s about 5 years ago, I didn't even tell my husband I was starting a run-walk program. About 2 weeks into it, I had to tell him when one morning he had to stay home sick and I wanted to stay with the training program. He started running a month later and we both love running together now.
Yeah, so you never know who you're going to inspire when you start building the habit and practice of running.
That's right.
Well, we're going to talk with somebody who runs a lot and has inspired a lot of people, and that is Mike Wardian. It's interesting how this interview came about because you did an indoor marathon on the last day of 2014. It was the first time you've done an indoor marathon. You had to do 211 laps around a track. There was this lap track at a junior college in Hagerstown, Maryland is where it was at. And why did you decide to do that anyway?
That's a very good question. I guess when I knew we were taking our trip out there to visit family over Christmas, mm-hmm. I just kind of started looking on Marathon Guide and Running in the USA to see if there were any marathons nearby. And I saw this race in Hagerstown, Maryland, and I'd never run a marathon in the state of Maryland. So I thought, oh, this looks interesting. And then I saw it was an indoor marathon. I thought, that sounds even more interesting. Not something really that I had ever desired to do in the past. But it was one of those things I thought, why not? You know, it would be a new and interesting experience.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I just decided to sign up for it. And we'll talk about that more on the next podcast about, you know, tips for running indoor marathons and, you know, also developing the mental toughness.
To get through the monotony.
Right, right. Whether it's running on a treadmill or on a track or, you know, whatever the challenging running situation is, you know, you can make it work.
Yeah. And we might add, this is my proud husband moment, that you got first place on the female side.
And I must add, out of humility, there was only three women.
Yeah, but you smoked those other two, so.
Yeah, it was kind of one of those wins where you're kind of like slightly embarrassed about it because it was nowhere near a good time for me.
But after you signed up, the race director emailed you and he's like, hey, I'm glad you're coming. He says, by the way, Michael Wardian was going to be there, and he's going to be trying to set a new world record for fastest indoor 50K time, which he did successfully. And we were there. I got to see him cross the finish line, and we were able to arrange this interview. And I know you folks are going to enjoy it, and you're going to be amazed just how many races he's able to do. Like, he's one of those runners who is really fast at the marathon and then also kicks butt in the ultra marathon, and he does like crazy back-to-back races, just pushing himself to see how far he can go till it breaks, right?
He really does all distances, so he's a very versatile runner and just a really nice guy.
So let's get into our interview with Mike Wardian right now. Well on my way, well on my way, well on my way. All right, we're on the podcast today with Michael Wardian. He's an accomplished marathoner, an ultra marathoner from Arlington, Virginia. Last year, he won the Big Sur Marathon and the Disney Dopey Challenge, but this is just the tip of the iceberg. His most recent accomplishment was setting a new indoor 50K record at the Hawk Indoor Marathon and 50K in Hagerstown, Maryland, which we were able to be at. And he finished 250 laps in 3 hours, 6 minutes, and 7 seconds, setting a world record for the 50K distance indoors. So, Michael, welcome to the MTA podcast.
Well, thanks, guys. It's very cool to be here, and it was a pleasure to meet you guys at the race. I think you both were running, weren't you?
Just Angie ran, and I was the guy snapping pictures. And
oh, that's right, that's right.
I couldn't talk him into it for some reason. I'm like, come on. I mean, you know, 211 laps around the track. Why not?
Well, yeah, and it was cool that because we didn't have to go all the same way. So that's the first time I've ever switched direction, which was really a nice treat. So I like that kind of dynamic where you switch sides every hour or so. I was hoping to only switch twice, but I didn't quite go fast enough.
Yeah, that was very helpful. I can't imagine running in one direction, but it sounds like you've done that before. So
yeah, I've done it before for sure. So so I definitely know what advantage it is being able to switch.
So after you finished, you were gracious enough to, you know, to stand around and visit with folks, and some people wanted an autograph, and I got to take a picture of you and your dad together because he was there. But then you said, I feel terrible right now.
Yeah, I felt terrible the whole day, actually. I had we were at some friend's house, and I had not my normal pre-race routine. And not that I have a very specific, you know, like I have to only eat like rice sprouted from, you know, manna that's fallen from the sky or something. But yeah, it was just not the best food options the night before. And I thought it wouldn't be that big of a deal. And it turned out to be kind of a big deal because I had to stop and go to the bathroom, and then I just didn't feel good. So so I was hoping that it would have been a little bit nicer. So I didn't feel good for a couple hours afterwards, but I felt fantastic later in the day. So it's too bad they didn't have it later in the day. But
that cost you about 3 minutes off your time, didn't it?
Well, yeah, that was when I just wasn't on the track. But then, like, I just didn't feel good. So who knows, right? Like, I might have run faster and slowed down even more at the end if I hadn't taken the time, or, you know, I would have maybe gone out too hard. So you never know. But yeah, definitely, like, not running for 3 minutes, being in the bathroom doesn't help your time.
That's for sure. Wow. Well, I mean, congratulations for staying strong and, you know, still setting the world record despite the way you were feeling. That's really commendable.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, it was cool. And thanks for being so gracious on the track. Everybody was so mindful, and it was really easy to navigate. So I appreciate that. It, you know, it's not a very long distance, so we see each other a lot. So it's nice to have courteous people out there. And I apologize if at the end I was starting to get a little bit tunnel vision. So
yeah, I understand.
Because earlier I think I was saying like hi and like how's it going, and by the end I was just like okay, I just need to get to the finish
line.
I
totally understand.
After saying hi about 250 times, I could see it get old.
It never gets old. It was just like I was just like I don't think they care anymore.
Everyone is starting to go into their own little world of pain, I think. So.
Yeah, that's what I think is interesting about those indoor races, especially for us as athletes, but also for the spectators, because a lot of times, you know, they don't get to see you at like mile 16 or something. It's just not convenient, or mile 22, right? Like you're still kind of far away from the finish line, but not close enough. Like it's still another 20 to 30, 40 minutes, you know, depending on how fast you're running. But you can see that person having a little bit of an issue. And even when on that track, when you have like a mile to go, it's still 8 laps. So you're like, God, this should be over. And then you're like, oh man, that's still 8 more laps. Like that's a lot.
That is amazing. Well, let's jump back a little bit, kind of to the beginning of how you got started running. You know, give us a little background and how you decided to start running marathons and then ultras.
Yeah, sure. I got really lucky. I grew up and I played a sport called lacrosse. So I did that growing up and went to Michigan State University, kind of going into my story. So yeah, so I played lacrosse. And then when I stopped playing lacrosse, I wanted to stay in shape and picked up running because it was the cheapest because I didn't have any money being a college student and also the most efficient. So I could go out for like an hour and get a good workout, get a good sweat going, and then continue to be a fraternity boy and go around and have fun. And I went to my buddy in my fraternity house, Vince Boyson's, for Easter, I think the end of my junior year. And his mom was just back from the Boston Marathon, and she had like the medal and she had like the space blanket and she had some pictures. And I just thought it was like the coolest thing ever. Like I'd seen it on like Wild World of Sports, and sometimes they used to broadcast it on TV. But I never knew any real people that had done it. So it kind of like penny dropped or whatever. And I was like, wow, I mean, if this lady can do it, it's just like my friend's mom. Like I could probably do that. So I asked her, like, hey, can you give me, like, a training program? And so that was kind of my first real training plan. And then I was like, well, I just want to run Boston once. That's, like, was my goal. And then this is, like, the before the internet, really. Like, the internet as we know it now, right? Like, where you can find all kinds of information and everything. So, like, I sent away for the entry form to the Boston, and you had to send them, like, a self-addressed stamped envelope to get it, come back, and, like, it comes back, and I'm, like, filling it out, like, sweet, this is going to be awesome. Like, I'll just go and do this marathon. And then it was like, oh, you have to qualify. What's your qualifying race? And I was like, what? Like,
what?
Like, oh, okay. So then I did Marine Corps because I lived in D.C. at the time. Like, I'd graduated and since come back to the area. And I kept training, just thinking, like, I would do it in 1996 would be my first Boston. But then I had to qualify, so I ran Marine Corps. I knew I had to run under 3 hours and 10 minutes, and I think I ran 3:08 and qualified. And I was like, oh, man, I just felt, you know, I wore, like, cross shorts and, like, a cotton T-shirt and, like, wow. I was all chafed and, yeah, I didn't know. Like, I went to Boston and ran, and I just got hooked. I thought everybody was cheering for me. I just thought I was the coolest guy ever. Like, I was just such
I'm sure you were.
Well, in my own head, I was, man. It was
especially
such
in
a
your
rush.
Sweatpants and your cotton T-shirt.
Well,
Boston.
Yeah, actually, my dad had forced me to buy a pair of race-ready shorts at that time. Like, and yeah. I refused to buy them, and he bought them for me. And it was like the first shorts I had with liners, and like at the beginning, I thought it was you versus your body. And like, I refused to take any energy gels or I didn't drink. I don't know. I just made it a lot harder than it was. But I still ran like 2:54, and I just thought I was like the coolest kid. And like, I went to the local running store, which is Pacers here. And I was like, I just ran Boston Marathon. And I was probably 300th or 400th. I thought that was amazing, right? And then all the guys I was talking to were like 220 athletes. They were really fast.
Yeah.
So it would just be like some kid coming up to you and just talking out of his head, not knowing what he's talking about. I was like, I want to be on your team. And they said, you're not fast enough to be on our team. And I was like, but I just ran 2:54. And they're like, yeah, whatever, man. You're not fast enough. But they said, hey, you can come to our track workouts. Like, we do a free track workout on Tuesday nights. And so I did. I just started showing up at their track workouts. And that's the amazing thing about running and athletic, you know, endurance sports in general, is a lot of it is just being consistent and just doing it. And you find efficiencies and you get better. And so that's what I did. I just kept showing up and I got faster. And faster. And then eventually there was a local 10 miler and a bunch of the guys from the team were, I don't know if I overheard them that they were going to this race, because I don't think they invited me.
You're stalking them?
Yeah, exactly. I think it might have been something to that effect, but I knew they were going to be at this race, and it was called the Wawa 10 miler. It's since been changed to the Heartwood 10 miler. So I showed up, and then I ran the race, and I beat all the guys on the team, and they were like, do you want to be on our team? And I was like, yes, I've been wanting to be on your team forever. And I just was so amazingly happy to have that singlet, and I'm still really friendly with Pacers here in D.C. and, you know, the other running stores in the area, but that was my first real sense of being a part of a team, you know, since being on the lacrosse team, and then since then, you know, I've kind of been able to keep improving, and I still am hoping to keep improving. And, you know, it's all about, for me, trying to kind of push what's possible and what I'm capable of. And, you know, I think that that's something that, you know, I was doing back then. Like, I remember I ran like 3 marathons in a month, and everyone's like, that's impossible. Like, you'll never be able to do that. And I did. And then, everyone's like, well, you know, what, you know, I can't believe you did that. And then the JFK 50 miler was coming up, and I was like, well, I'm going to go win that. I mean, I ran like 2:30. I mean, if I just do that twice, that's like 5-hour marathon. I'm going to crush everybody. And of course, I didn't really know what I was doing and ended up not winning even close, but I did finish, and I got a taste for ultras, and it was just mind-blowing that anyone could run that fast for that long. And you know, I've since run some of the faster times in the country and around the world for those distances, but it's amazing how you know, you can take, just like, I just wanted to do something once, and you get caught up in it, and you get super excited about it, and then it just becomes who you are and what you do, and a huge part of my life.
What I hear in that is you're always thinking about what's possible or what opportunities are there, and didn't let other people's thinking kind of limit you. Like, oh, you can't run it that fast, or you can't do 3 marathons in a month. It's like you're open to the possibilities of what you could do, which is,
well,
awesome.
Yeah, and I'm not afraid to fail, I guess, like, because I mean, that's what I think a lot of people are worried about. And I think a lot of people, and it's not just people you don't know, I think it's your people that are close to you are trying to protect you. You know, they don't want you to get hurt, they don't want you to have a bad experience, and so they say things that are well intentioned and are probably the right the right call. But if you don't try, then you'll never know, you know? And right. I like that aspect of, you know, kind of seeing for yourself what's possible. And it I think for me, every time someone says, you know, that's impossible or that's maybe not the best idea, it makes me want to do it even more just to see if I can prove them wrong. So, and sometimes I make mistakes, and like anyone, you know, but a lot of times, like, you push through the other side and you just have this amazing adventure or experience.
Yeah. You're a fast marathoner. According to your Wikipedia page, it says that you've run a 2:17:49 marathon.
That is my personal best at the moment. Yes.
Yes. But what's remarkable too is you get around to a ton of races every year and compete.
Yes.
In those races. So give our listeners a sense of that. Like, how many races did you do in 2014?
Well, luckily, I pulled it up here just in case you asked. So I knew this actually, but I did 54 races in 2014.
Wow.
Yes, it was cool.
That's more than one a week.
Yeah. And how many of those were ultras?
I just did that for Ultra Running Magazine yesterday. 17 of those were ultras.
And you were what age in 2014?
I turned 40 in April of 2014. So I just became a master athlete, which is just another really cool thing, is that I think a lot of athletes or people in general start to give up on their dreams and doing what they want. And I don't think you have to. I mean, I think you can do anything that you're able to. I mean, I don't think there's any reason why you need to stop doing what you love.
That's right.
I'm sure you're still out there beating plenty of guys that are in their 20s.
Yeah, sometimes, but sometimes I don't win. And it's funny, my family will be quick to inform me of when I've been regulated to a different position. Yeah, it looks like I won 20 races. 19 races all out.
Wow.
From 5K up to 140-mile stage race in Costa Rica.
That's a huge variety. I mean, not many people, you know, have to keep their 5K speed as well as be able to, you know, compete at a stage race. What are the highlights of the races you did last year? I mean, obviously you enjoy a big variety of things.
There were so many highlights. It was an incredible year. I mean, I raced on, I think, 5 continents, so including the North Pole. So I won the first ever American to win the North Pole Marathon in 2014, which was unbelievable. It was the UVU North Pole Marathon, which happens to be one of my sponsors. So like it was really cool to be a part of that event. They have some pretty extreme events, so to do well there. And then I won the Coastal Challenge in Costa Rica. That was the stage race. So I'd been a couple times, but never to this part of Costa Rica. And we really got to see just a huge variety of terrain. And the other cool thing about a stage race is you're with the same people over a course of a week. So you get a really good chance to mingle and you know, kind of make some really close relationships with people. And that's always fun. I did a race called the Tarawara 100K in New Zealand. Just mind-blowingly beautiful. Always a place that I'd wanted to go. And then did some racing in the U.S., did a race in Ethiopia that I'm helping to coordinate, so put together some charity for that, and going to Ethiopia was a real treat, and did the Comrades Ultra Marathon last year in South Africa, which is one of my favorites. Was able to go to Squamish, British Columbia for the Squamish 50-50, and I actually won the inaugural. You ran a 80K or 50-miler on Saturday and then followed it up with a 50-mile on Sunday. And then I did a Vermont City Marathon. I did a bunch of marathons, too. I think I ended up running 11 marathons. So Boston, Vermont.
And this is all while you've got a full-time job and a wife and 2 kids, right?
Yeah, exactly.
How many hours a night do you sleep?
Hopefully as many as I can.
Are you like one of those guys that can get by in like 4 or 5 hours?
Yes, I am.
Wow.
But it's not the best way to treat your body. So I try to do better for my body, but it is possible for me to go on that kind of regime. I think I learned it from my boss. I don't think he sleeps very much either. So he's a good example. And then I actually qualified for a couple of the world teams for the U.S. So I went to Qatar twice for the 50K and 100K worlds. And then I went to a race that I've always been wanting to go to, the Ultra Trail de Mont Blanc, where you circumnavigate Mont Blanc. And that was epically beautiful and stunning. That was another one. And then I did the Marine Corps Marathon, and that's, you know, that's special to me just because, it's been the first one that I did, and I won the Masters division, which was cool, and I just missed the podium. So someday I did a 50-miler the week before, the Tussie Mountainback 50-miler, which is a pretty race out in State College, and they just do a bang-up job, and I just couldn't pass it up. But, man, it was a bummer to come up like 3 minutes short of winning Marine Corps, so...
You were the first place Masters finisher. We were at Marine Corps too.
Oh yeah,
we loved it. That was our first year being there. We're going to definitely try to get in the lottery again.
Oh yeah, for next fantastic. Year. If you can be a part of Marine Corps, it's a good one.
So you were the first place Masters finisher, and then how far off of the first place finisher were you?
I think I was about 4 minutes, three and a half, 4 minutes. It was a bummer because it was a good opportunity to do well. So.
But you did a 50K the week before, so 50 miler the week before.
Before that, I did the Twin Cities Marathon, which is always they just do such an amazing job there, and it was the Masters National Championship. So I lost out to Mubarak Hussein. I was the second master overall in that race. And, man, that guy is an amazing 49 years old, and he beat me by 20 seconds. Like, he was just and he ran 2:22. Like, I mean, we were running fast, and just an incredible athlete. And then the week after that, I finished, I think, third at the Hartford Marathon. So that's another race that if you get an opportunity, it's just really well done, kind of a smaller race, but just excellent race committee and direction on that. So I did that the week after, and then I did the Tussie Mountainback 50-miler and won that, and then Marine Corps. So I had four of those races back-to-back-to-back, and then I went to the 50K World Championships and ended up sixth overall in the world. So it was it was a good effort and a big month in October of this year.
So do you have any tips that you can offer for doing back-to-back marathons like that successfully? Not for people who want to try to win, but just for people who want to do them injury-free.
Like same weekend or like back-to-back weekends? Or
yeah, I would say back-to-back weekends.
Yeah, because, I mean, I've done some where you do them the same weekend, and that's kind of more like just like a ultra effort. You know, you're just going back-to-back hard runs. But back-to-back weekends, I mean, I think you have to kind of respect your body. But for me, what I like to do is kind of keep moving, because I think a lot of people after a race, they kind of go into hibernation mode for a couple of days and you know, take it super easy. And I think that it just leads to your body feeling a little bit wonky when you start to ramp back up. And so if you can keep moving after the race and then, you know, even do a little jog or just keep walking. I mean, I think walking is underrated as a recovery tool. And so I like to do that. And then I do compression and ice also.
I want to ask you, I want to go back to, how do you balance it all? A lot of people were wondering about that too, because folks have read your Wikipedia page and also looked at your website, which I encourage everybody to do. We'll put links to those pages on our blog with this episode.
Yeah, and I need to update my website actually. Like I haven't I haven't put any race results up for a while. That's like been low on my priority list, but it needs to be updated a little bit. So
too much running and not enough blogging.
Yeah, exactly. That's the one thing. I'm very good at social media, but I lack the blogging aspect. So I don't really blog. I feel like I'd rather just engage in Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, we can definitely put links to your social media on our blog too.
Yeah, but that would be rad. Thanks, guys.
So do you find yourself that you have to really schedule in your workouts and, you know, family time? I mean, you know, a lot of people sometimes we'll say, you know, I'm too busy to train, but clearly you're able to balance a lot of things and make it work. So kind of, you know, give your best tips for keeping everything in the air.
For me, it's lucky. I mean, I have a great support system. My wife is like legitimately just awesome. She, I guess, knew what she was getting into because I was doing a lot of running before we met, but she's also just allowed me to kind of keep at it and never kind of limited what's possible for the most part. But what I try to be respectful, I think that's the biggest thing that I try to do is, and I call it like invisible training. So I basically try to keep it as minimally impacting on the family as possible. So if I don't run before I go to work, then I'll run to work. Like I run commuted today. And then I did another workout at lunch, and then I'm going to run home. So, you know, and I think that there's ways to find efficiencies in what we do. I mean, I'm lucky that I'm close enough to run and having a work environment where they allow me to come in and be a little smelly, and then, you know, I can take care of that. So for me, it's finding ways that I can still get the work in that I need to do to be competitive and to keep me happy as a person, because it's not just about being competitive, but I run because I love it. And it's been interesting since I got a bunch of injuries a couple of years ago for the first time. I had 5 stress fractures and 5 hernias in 2012. And, that's when, and it was really tough. I had to, stop running and let my body recover. And, you know, it was, I was just trying to run. I was trying to do too much. And now I have to be really cognizant of, you know, what I'm doing and what's possible. And, you know, there's a lot of opportunity to get out of balance. So you have to kind of keep things in perspective. And I think having the injury actually turned into a good thing because it's kept me grounded. And, but also, you know, allowed me to know that I was able to come back from it and compete at a really high level again and kind of get back to where I was. So I'm not as worried about, you know, if I don't hit a certain number of miles, if I'm not getting 120 miles in and I'm only getting 80 miles in or 70 miles or whatever I can get in, then that's going to be what I get in. And before the injuries and before that stuff, if I didn't hit 100 miles every week, it wasn't a disaster, but I wasn't as happy as I am now. So,
right.
You know, I'm just really happy every day to be able to run and be out experiencing the world and moving. Like, I think no matter what, even when I was injured, I was like hiking and cycling. And, you know, I think you probably have this too. You'll have those people like, oh, I can't believe how much you run. You're going to have like no knees left. And I always think, well, when that happens or if that happens, then I'll find something else that I'll be as equally passionate about, I guess. And right. I don't ever see myself, you know, just being complacent and happy with, you know, taking things for the way that they are rather than trying to be able to explore for myself. So I guess the way I balance it is wake up early. And I think that's, for me, the best way to do it is because if you wait till later in the day, I mean, life happens to all of us. We're not in a bubble, and most of us aren't professional athletes where, you know, we have a good excuse where, like, yes, honey, I know that I need to, you know, do the trash, but, you know, this is my job. Like, this is not anyone's job for the most part. So this is something that people do because they love it. But if you didn't do it, you're still going to be able to pay your mortgage and that kind of stuff. So we don't really have the ability to say, like, I need to go do a 2.5, 3, 5, 7 hour run because that's what's putting food on the table, right? So I try to make it fit into the parameters of the responsibilities that I have. And so for me, that's, you know, running early, running to work, running at my lunch hour, and then eating at my desk, and then running home or cycling home. And once I get home, I'm just like a straight up dad for the most part. I help with teeth and books and bed and, you know, taking the dog around the block and doing all the stuff you do as a dad, you know?
Exactly. So, you know, you mentioned coming back from injury. Talk about what specifically things that you've implemented since then. You talked about, you know, not being so worried about hitting a certain mileage. Do you do any specific cross training? You know, kind of throw down some tips for people who may be struggling with injury right now.
What I did is cross trained by cycling because I had stress fractures and that it was a non-impact and it didn't aggravate my stress fractures and the hernias after the, you know, you have a couple weeks where you're limited as to what you can do. But I was able to cycle by the Tuesday after I had the hernia surgery. And then I was still cycling to and from work. And then I was hiking on the treadmill, up to 4 hours at a time, you know, getting in a lot of vertical, but without any impact for the most part. And then I was also doing a lot of aqua jogging, which is amazing. Not the most exciting thing in the world, but it is really a good workout. So, I mean, I was doing a lot of that. I made what I called some stress fracture friends at the pool. So, you know, a lot of us were rehabbing as runners there. And then, I think I kept a lot of fitness. I didn't have a lot of running fitness. So it was about 3.5, 4 months before I was able to start running again. And I was able to do that at the Endurance Athlete Center here in DC. They have an Ultra G treadmill. So I think taking advantage of the technology is important too. So like reaching out to the physical therapists and trying to find ways that you can get a workout in. And the first question I asked of the doctor when he came in and said, you know, you have these stress fractures and, you know, is what can I do? And I think that that's the attitude is rather than what can't I do, which is running, like, which I love the most, is like, what is possible? And then I just tried to expand on that, and then I just kept thinking that I can't wait till I get back. And my first thing that I'd always wanted to run the rim to rim to rim in the Grand Canyon, and I just made that my goal, was just to be able to do that when I came back from the injury. So have something. I think we all probably have, you know, one race or one adventure that we want to do. And a lot of times, like for me, like the rim to rim to rim was always something I wanted to do, but I never made time to do it because I always was racing or doing events and that kind of stuff. And I just made that a focus of my recovery, was like, once I'm able to start running again, I'm gonna do this. And I did it with my brother, and, you know, so I looked at it as an opportunity rather than as something that was a detriment.
That's good. We have a question from Andrew, and he wants you to talk about developing mental toughness, you know, specifically if you have any tools to get your mind somewhere else, or how you handle longer events and tough spots in races.
Yeah, this especially came up when we told folks about your indoor 50K record. You're like, how does he tolerate the monotony of so many laps around the track? I mean, or is it not monotony anymore?
No, I don't mind it at all. I actually like that kind of instant feedback. I thought it was pretty cool to like come around every time and be like 42, and then like then, yeah. You know, as it got later in the, you know, I didn't run 42 the whole time, I'll tell you that. But like as you run, you know, 43 or 45, or at the end, I was probably running even slower than that. That 1 second difference every time you come around over the course of 8 laps, that's 8 seconds. That's 4 minutes per mile, or 4 minutes over the course of a marathon more, you know, like, so It's crazy. Like when you start thinking of the minutia like that. And for me, I don't know. I just get in a nice mental state in my head, and kind of have. You guys were there, so you saw, but like I had the goal, I wanted to break the marathon record too, and when I ended up in, you know, going to the restroom, you know, I knew that was going to be really a difficult challenge. And so I think having multiple goals is something that I definitely recommend, is, you know, don't just have one goal, because if you only, you know, if my only goal was to break the marathon record and I knew it wasn't going to be possible, then it's a lot easier to, you know, find reasons not to keep going. Not to keep going. I mean, like, why should I do this if I'm not going to kind of achieve what I want to do? So I always try to have, you know, multiple tiered goals in all the events that I do. You know, it may be, you know, my first goal is always to try to finish. I mean, I think that's just honors the sport and what we're out there to try to do. I mean, there's times when I haven't been able to finish, for sure. I mean, last year I had to drop out of a race, and I hadn't dropped out of a race. I think in my career I've dropped out of like 4 races, and, you know, so it was a big deal to me, but I wasn't in a position to keep going. I wasn't being safe to myself or the other competitors, and I think you have to be cognizant of where you are.
Yeah.
But, you know, I had goals in that race to win, and then I knew that wasn't going to happen. And then, you know, I had a goal of like a podium, and then to run the best I could, and then, you know, to try to finish. And I think having tiered goals, I mean, so that you always have something to shoot for, that's something that keeps me going. And then doing workouts that are tough, and doing your training. I mean, I think I look back on that a lot of times, and I think about all the hours I've put in and all the sacrifices that have been made, and how lucky I am to be somewhere. And I think, like, you know, how many people get to do this? Like, this is a real privilege and an honor, and, you know, you have to respect that. And I think for me, that's something that, you know, I can draw on when I need to.
Another Academy member is asking, Joelle, and she wants to know how being vegetarian affects your running. And if you can give us a look into your nutrition philosophy, why are you vegetarian, and how do you, especially like, how do you fuel for races?
I've been vegetarian for a long time. And it's been since high school. I didn't eat red meat. And then in college, I ate chicken. And then I got salmonella poisoning, actually. And I was like, I don't really need to eat that anymore. And then it was really about me just kind of experimenting with my body. And I think, you know, I think we all, or at least I find that, you know, we should all do that from time to time, just because we've done something a certain way doesn't mean that should always be that way. And it tended to work best for me. I just felt like I recovered quicker, and I was surprised at how strong I felt without eating meat. And seafood and that kind of stuff. And I think it's kind of like the injury thing. Is people think like, oh, because you eat meat, you're not going to be able to eat anything. But I think what it does is opens your eyes up to all the other cool things that you can eat and that give you energy. And it's good energy. I mean, I think there's plenty of guys I know that do really well eating like McDonald's and there's a time and place for everything, right? I mean, a milkshake tastes good every now and then, and pizza is fantastic if it's done right, and you know, there's French fries that are amazing, and sometimes during a race I'll like know that I'm gonna crave, you know, a pint of blackberries at the end or something, like, you know, there's, I don't know, that I think there's so many amazing ways to get nutrition out there, and it's really individual. Like, you got to figure out what works for you, but everyone should experience and gain their own path on that, because what works for someone might not work for somebody else. And you know, I've seen dudes that eat like a box of jelly donuts and kick my butt, and other guys that drink like whole milk only from like goats that are raised at 10,000 feet, you know. So like, you gotta
certified goats.
Yeah, exactly. Certified organic high alpine goat cheese only, you know, and everybody has a way to do their own nutrition. And
would you say that in your everyday life you typically try to avoid sugar?
I wouldn't say, I don't like eat regular sugar, I guess, but I eat a lot of honey, so that has sugar, and then fructose, so like apples and bananas and so I guess it's more maybe natural sugars and carbs in that capacity. And I think, you know, I'm probably more high carb. And, you know, I did a study, I guess a year ago or so, where it was a high carb versus low carb. And I was definitely the guy in the high carb category, because with I eat a lot of, you know, bread and those type of things. And so I fell into that camp. And, you know, I think that's really worked well for me. And but I've definitely noticed that there's a trend for people that are doing different things, and low carb is kind of hip and cool now, and high fat and gluten free and all that kind of stuff. And I'm for it, man. I'm for whatever works for the person, but I definitely think for me the carbs and you know, having that kind of fuel to burn allows me to kind of compete at the best level, and you know, it works.
So do you take any fuel during a marathon? And if so, like, what do you take?
Well, I'm lucky. I work with a company called Vitargo. So they have one of those long chain carbohydrate. And that is amazing, man. It's like super clean and easy.
Is it like a gel or a liquid? Or
it's a powder, actually, that you mix with water. And it's got calories. And it doesn't have electrolytes in the U.S., but in Europe they have it with electrolytes. So it's kind of really amazing when it has the electrolytes, too. But it's fine, because I work with another company called Succeed, who has the sodium potassium tablets. So I use that with the Vitargo, and that's worked really well for me. That's been a nice combination, and I usually take it before, and then if I can get it again in the middle, it's knockout. And it's 300 calories, so it's quite a bit of calories, and it's a nice little package. It's like, I don't know if you know Jason Slarb, but he is another Vitargo athlete, or Dave Mackey, but those guys have been proponents of it, and I was lucky enough to get hooked up with them last year, and it really had some positive effects for me. So I'm psyched. I'm planning to be with them again in 2015, and so I'm looking forward to kind of growing together on that.
So are there any bucket list races that you have? I mean, you've run a ton of races all over the world. Is there something that you still haven't done that you would really like to experience?
Oh man, yes, there's tons. Do we have a lot of time? There's
as much as you want.
there are so many. I think, and I want to go back and do the full course of the Tarawara 100K, so that's why I'm going again this year. I mean, that's just a terrific event. I want to do the Spartathlon at some point, so that's in Greece, and I haven't been able to make it over there for that yet. There's a race called Diagonal des Fous, where you run across a mountain in Trans Gran Canaria, which is another like big race. I want to do some like adventures. Like, I've always wanted to do the Appalachian Trail. I've never done that yet, but That's one of those things where, like, if I ever get fired, which I'm definitely working on, like...
That's why you showed up to work stinky, right?
That's why you're talking to us during work, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. My sister is next to me. She's the one who's going to kick me out of here, I think, eventually. But that would be something that's really cool. I wanted to do some more of the Spartan race type stuff, so I think that would be fun. I'd like to go to Antarctica now that I've done the North Pole, and... I'll be going to Australia for the first time. So yeah, the North Face 100K in Australia. So we're going to go down for Wings for Life, and then Jennifer and the boys and I are going to be able to spend upwards of, like, I think around 20 days or so in Australia, kind of exploring. Wow. And then we'll finish the trip with the North Face 100K, which has been on my bucket list. I had some former teammates that had gone and told me how cool it was, and I've been trying to get over there forever, so they were nice enough to allow me to be a part of that this year. And then I'm trying to do the fastest time in all the marathon majors, so like Tokyo, Boston, London, Berlin, Chicago, and New York. And if I can get into Tokyo, I'll do it this year. But I haven't been able to get the right person yet, so that's been a little bit of a challenge. But if I can't do it this year, maybe next year, because I think I could set a really good time for the overall time into that. And yeah, I don't know, man. I have like a humongous list of events. There's actually a race in Sweden that I've been trying to get over to, and it looks like I might be able to get there this year, called the Ultra Vasen. It's like a 90K that one of our friends, Jonas Bude, he's a really amazing athlete. He's one of the founders of this event, so I'm hoping to go there for the first time and kind of get to race in that part of the world. And yeah, there's no limit to the amount of things that I want to do, and hopefully, like, I'll keep getting the support from my sponsors. They're pretty amazingly generous, and I'm gonna get to do Lake Sonoma this year, the 50 miler that everyone has been gushing about. And it's Tropical John is the guy that puts it on from Ultra Running Magazine, so it'll be cool to, you know, be out there and mix it up. And then I'll get to go back to Western States this year, because one of my sponsors in Gingy is helping me get there. So I'm can't believe how lucky I am. I'm just like living a dream right now. And
that's great.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's like, it's surreal. Like, I pinch myself all the time at just how fortunate we are, and I just can't believe I'm getting these opportunities. And you know, I hope I'm sharing them in a way that people can appreciate, and hopefully people are finding some inspiration from.
Sometimes I'll start watching videos on YouTube or something about ultra marathons and ultra marathoners, and there's one where you are racing against Anton Kaprichka. I think you guys are at like the Miwok 100 or something.
Oh, he destroyed me that day.
Somebody's put some music to it, you know.
Oh, that
and
one
little
is great.
Commentary.
I'll watch that on the treadmill too. Yeah. It's like me going down to the turnaround, and I didn't realize we had to go all the way back up that hill. I thought we would just like run flat from there, and like
yeah.
I was trying to like bury him, and like he was not having it, and then he buried me. It was yeah.
Well, if people want to find you online, where would they need to go?
Well, I am at most of the social media outlets. So Facebook, it's just Michael Wardian or Mike Wardian, and I think you'd have to like my athlete page now, because my normal page is a little bit full, and then I'm at Twitter at Mike Wardian. I also am on Pinterest, and I have a website, MikeWardian.com. So you can find me any of those places. And yeah, I coach and I run and I speak, and yeah, I do all those things, and then try to do some work in between and be a dad and all that kind of stuff.
Well, cool. Thank you so much for taking the time with us today. It's been great talking to you, and I'm looking forward to following you in the coming year and just seeing, you know, how you take on the world, really.
Oh, yeah, well, thank you.
If you ever decide to write a book, we'll be first in line to get a copy. So.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that's something that's been on my agenda for a while. I haven't made the time yet. So eventually, hopefully, I'll be able to make that happen.
You just need to dictate it while you run, you know?
I thought about writing it entirely like that, just with Siri, yeah. But she's not so good. So I could just do like a voicemail or like a voice memo, because I do run a lot and listen to a lot of podcasts. So I've thought like, well, that would be a really cool way to do a book is you do it entirely while you're running, but I think it, I need to make it good rather than just like have like that as the as the premise. But yeah,
just have a really good editor.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I gotta find that person.
All right, well, thank you so much, Michael.
All right, guys, thank you very much.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Michael Wardian. Michael, if you're listening, thank you for letting us interrupt your day. And he was at work when we talked to him, but he was gracious enough to Skype with us. And don't I feel like a slacker now? When I hear about how many events that he went to last year and how diligently he trains, you know, running to work, running during his lunch break, running home.
Well, I don't think we need to compare ourselves to other people, but it is, I think, a lesson to me that if you're really dedicated and disciplined, you can make it work. Even if you have a full-time job, a busy schedule, a family, you know, he finds ways to fit his training in and really run at a high level.
Definitely. Well, now it's time for this episode's quick tip. And Angie's going to tell you about an essential piece of gear. If you want to stay warm while you're running outside in cold, chilly temperatures, which is what we've had up in Missouri for the last couple of weeks. So, Angie, what did you find and what's it called?
It's called the Polar Buff, and I wouldn't say it's necessarily essential, but it's really, really nice to have.
Yeah. Yes. Essential if you're running around the Arctic Circle.
I've had a buff for many years, and it's basically like a cylinder of microfiber, kind of long, and you can use it in many different ways.
Like a tube sock for your neck.
Yeah, or your head, and you can make it into a balaclava. Like a neck scarf to pull up over your mouth and nose. You can use it as just a headband, a sweatband. There's just a ton of uses for it. And if you go over to the website, buffwear.com, they have all these videos to show you how to do all these cool tricks with your buff. Anyway, I got the polar version, and it has about a foot of fleece material along with about a foot of microfiber. So it just adds that added warmth, and it breathes really well. So I've been having a lot of fun wearing it in different ways and staying super warm in the colder weather.
So if you don't like taking cold wind to the face when you go out and run, look at getting a polar buff. And we'd just like to say thanks again to our official hotel sponsor, the Drury Hotels. If you want to get a great rate on your room when you stay there, as well as get a free digital download gift from us, you can find out on our website how to do that. They've been a sponsor of ours now for, I don't know, going on 4 years. So thankful for the relationship that we've had with them. That's Drury Hotel Company. And we are staying right now at the lovely New Orleans location.
That's right, in the newly remodeled section.
Yeah. Went down to the French Quarter last night, and she got a little tipsy, but I carried her back to the hotel.
You have a very vivid imagination. I think it was I who was dragging you back to the hotel.
No. Angie is the epitome of responsibility, so you just have to know her.
Responsible is my middle name.
Great food here, though, you know?
That's right.
So we're going to go on this cruise, and hopefully you won't get back too out of shape. We're going to do a little bit of running on the deck, because you got a running streak going that you've been maintaining since Thanksgiving, so we're going to maintain that at sea.
That's right. I'll have more information to add to my podcast about running an indoor marathon. In this case, I'll be practicing running on an outdoor track on a ship.
That's right, Angie. And since you're a little bit clumsy, I think I'm going to make them require you to wear a life jacket when you run around on the track on the top of the deck.
I thought you were going to hold a leash or something.
You picture that, wearing a life jacket, running around.
That'd be awkward.
Just to be safe.
It'd be like on What About Bob, that movie where he's like strapped to the boat, yeah, and he has like a life jacket on. I'm a sailor. I sail.
And if you'd like more information on all things marathon training, find us over at our website, marathontrainingacademy.com. Thank you for listening to this episode. We're so glad to be on this running journey with you. And like always, we want you to remember, you have what it takes to run a marathon and change your life. Well on my way, well on my way.